Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. The 2008 economic crash, Occupy Wall Street, and the expanding income gap between rich and poor have compelled a lot of thinking and experimentation about how to create real prosperity for more people in America. How can we democratize our local economies to achieve community goals like providing a living wage, protecting our environment, or giving our children a quality education? Instead of investing in Wall Street, how can we harness the financial wealth that exists within our area to support local, community-serving businesses and organizations and keep this money recirculating for the benefit of everyone in our community? Local investment in good jobs, ownership opportunities, and community entrepreneurship is being implemented in communities across the country to create thriving local economies. Here with me live in the Gila Members Community Radio studio to talk about local investing are my guests Linda Amon-Smith and Gordon West of the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for joining me this morning, Gordon and Linda.
Thank you.
Thanks, Allison.
All right, let's start out by telling our listeners why the concept of local is so important to our economy. And I know there's like a term for it, localism, and you two are premier localists, Linda and Gordon. Linda, you want to tell us?
Locanistas.
Locanistas.
Yeah, local means that we try to get more money from the outside coming into our community. We have a focus on trying to tighten the pipes that let the money go out of our community so they get smaller. And we want to recirculate more of the money that we have here now. Why is this important? Well, as Allison noted in her introduction, with the corporatization and wealth grabbing that's gone along with how many corporations put in chain stores and then suck all of the money out of our economy, it's really important for us to begin to think about really three different things. And we'll talk about these throughout the program. One is the idea of really having a focus on buying services and products that are generated locally. And I have a definition of local that I will share with you in a bit. The other is to really encourage local entrepreneurship. That means developing structures that encourage local folks to start up businesses. And some of that might mean different ways of structuring those businesses, such as cooperatives, LLCs that have a greater membership, and maybe even things like land trusts. And then the third thing to really talk about a local economy is local finance. So we're going to be talking about that today in the program, because the more money that we can generate here and keep here, the more money all of us should have here.
Great. Gordon, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'd like to suggest that we don't often think of what an economy is. I mean, we all think we know, we use the word all the time, but I don't think many people have ever really thought about it. And really, it's most basic. An economy is the exchange of money or goods and services. And if you're not doing that, you don't have a healthy economy. And a lot of goods and services exchange goes on in small communities, but a great deal of that are for goods and sometimes services that come from outside the area. So in the exchange, we're just kind of losing. So there's certain ways money comes into the community. And in one like Silver City, retirement income is actually one. There's the hospital, state government, the Forest Service, even the mines bring some money in, but we send an awful lot of money back out as interest on loans and for energy as a couple of large items. Another is building materials, food. So in order to have a good, healthy economy, we need to try and skew that more towards us exchanging goods and services amongst ourselves and reduce that outside exchange, even though that, you know, we can't get rid of that. And there's a lot we can do to increase what we do locally.
So we've heard a lot about local living economy. So what's the living mean? Local living economy. What's that term mean? Because we're going to talk a lot about that in today's program.
Well, I'll start this and then Gordon can pick it up. The idea of the local living economy is part of the name of the Business Alliance for a Local Living Economy, which is perhaps the largest and oldest structured organization that really provides resources and support and education and networking for those of us in communities who really want to be more local. And they define the local living economy as not just the money of the exchange and services, but the recognition of the fact that being more focused locally means that you should also be focusing, and it seems to happen, on things like local education, health, recreation for the community and for those visiting the community, different ways of farming, different ways of light manufacturing. So the living economy means that it's perking, right? It's bubbling. There is a lot of activity. There's stuff going on. Not only are there ways locally to make money, but there are ways locally to enjoy living here. And so I think that's where the local living comes from. So if you ever want to know more about that, go to the BALLE, Business Alliance for Local Living Economy website. Just put it into your browser and you will be stunned with the amount of research, educational opportunities, and networking opportunities that you will find there.
Gordon, you want to add to that, the concept of local living economy?
Yeah, there's another term called the triple bottom line for return on investment. And most usually when we think of investments, we think that the return is going to be money. And, you know, it's often is and probably should almost always be. But there are other things that either save us money or improve our environment or lower other costs. So there's environmental issues and there's also social issues. So when we invest in something and, you know, make some money and then we spend that money, one thing to think about is what is it you want to buy with the money that you're earning? And usually it's one of the other two bottom lines. So if you want to be a little more efficient about getting what you want for your money, you can invest directly locally into social and environmental issues. We've been doing a lot of work lately to try to assign some kind of associated monetary value to the other two returns on investment, the social and the environmental. It's a little bit tricky. One of the reasons it's tricky is because it tends to then reduce everything in our thinking to money again. And what we're trying to do is to broaden out from just thinking about investing resulting in money.
Okay, so let's jump into the whole idea of local investing. Why is it important to create prosperous communities? Linda, I think you mentioned a couple examples of local investing. So let's kind of get into the nitty-gritty here of local investing.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, first I'll start by saying that there's actually a good string of research studies that shows very clearly that when we focus on buying local, which remember is the first step that I outlined in the three-step process, and by local, I mean businesses that are owned and operated by local entities, local partnerships, local individuals. And by local, we've tended to describe it in the Green Chamber as within about a 50-mile radius. So you can own a business in Silver City and still live in Gila, of course, because then it's really local. So that means that a local entity, a business that is owned and operated by a local entity, if a person, and I use this example, let's say that you want to buy a nice grass-fed beef patty, and it's only going to cost you a dollar. If you go to our local store, our local co-op, or some of the other local stores, and to spend that dollar, about 45 cents of that dollar will recirculate in our community. It's going to stay here. But if you go out on the 180 and you go to the largest food seller in the United States, companies who starts with a W, and spend that dollar, 12 cents will stay in our community. So that's one of the reasons why buying local is really important, is because there's proven economic multiplier differences between goods and services that are generated and sold locally versus ones that get shipped in from who knows where and then sold to the population. Sometimes there's a slight price differential. So one of the things that Gordon spoke about with the triple bottom line is if you have to pay 4 cents more for a patty local, go ahead and do it because it actually will stay more in your community. Is that a good start?
Yes, that is. And Gordon, would you like to add to that idea of local investing? So Linda just talked about buying local. What are some other concepts or things that we can do to invest locally?
One of the most promising things, I think, which later I will want to focus on actually investing in local businesses, but just as a simple investment vehicle, probably one of the best things we can do is to invest in conservation or conserving, particularly energy. Wall Street hasn't been doing very well in typical investments, like in the S&P 500 or Wall Street. They've actually been flat for 16 years, inflation adjusted. Inflation has been 3%. And even U.S. Treasury bonds over the past 15 years have only averaged 1.85%. So they're not keeping up with inflation. But if I told you I have a simple, easy way that you could make 50% guaranteed forever on an investment, you would think I was pulling your leg. But in fact, that's what you get by doing energy upgrades to your home. It's entirely possible to, say, spend $5,000 on insulation and draft ceiling and some lighting stuff, and that would pay back, and that's how we usually talk about it. It has maybe a two-year payback. But for some reason, two-year payback doesn't mean the same thing as a 50% return on investment, which is what it actually is. So if you have money in a money market account, you might be making 0.5%, or you could take some of that money and save energy and make 50%, and it would be forever because you would forever not be spending that money on energy.
Okay, what are some other examples?
Such a great example.
Come on, let's hear a better one, Linda.
Let's see. Linda, can you talk,
Gordon? I don't know if I can bat that one away. Well, here's another reason why local is so important. Again, research shows that people who are invested in their community by either owning a piece of or actually being the operational folks with a local business, and that means one that's not, you're not sending your money off to the corporate headquarters, tend to have higher wages, and they tend to have much more civic engagement. Now, that one was really interesting to me, but there have been lots of studies in the sociology and socio-psychology literature that just show that when we say invest local by having a business or investing in the business or thinking about how the triple bottom line works here in local businesses, the payoff in terms of civic engagement, health, satisfaction, all of those living things is much, much greater. And it's for me, since I used to be a professor of organizational behavior, I always wanted to look at that. If you have a company and you're only looking at the money, but you're killing people, you don't want to ever have that happen. Tends to not happen with local investing, local businesses.
Okay, well, we'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk more about local investing with Linda Amon-Smith and Gordon West of the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. My guests today are Gordon West and Linda Amon-Smith of the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. And we've been talking about local investing. How can we invest in our local community, keep more of the money here in our local community circulating here and improving our local living economy? So let's get into more details about local investing. other options for local investing, like shared ownership, because we actually have an example across the street from the Gila Members Community Radio Studio, the co-op, right? Silver City Food Co-op. What? Tell us more about sort of how the co-op works and how is that an example of local investing?
Well, of course, I shop at the co-op. So let me take that and say the 3 points that I laid out were that we needed to focus on buying local, being local. And the second thing is the how to do that, the structuring of things. There's a lot of ways to structure an organization. So a local business, again, is one that is owned and operated by the people who live in the community and will include a lot of our outlying municipalities in the community. It could also be, people often ask me, well, can a franchise ever be local? Well, it depends. If a franchise has the pretty loose structure such that an organization or a franchisee says to the person who's going to own the franchise, you know, I don't care pretty much where you source your stuff as long as you use our marketing and our signage, then that can really be local. And franchise owners also really differ in the amount of fees and money that they have to pay back to the franchisor. So we can have local franchises. I want to say that really clearly. So that's a structural thing. Another structural thing is, you know, partnerships that are agreed upon, like Gordon noted, to have a triple bottom line focus in their decision making. Another is cooperatives. Now, we have this co-op. There are lots of cooperatives throughout the world, more in Europe than there are in the United States. But it's a growing interest about how to really structure businesses. And when I'm talking with young entrepreneurs, I'm encouraging them to look at the structure of a co-op, because a co-op is essentially the granddaddy of the employee-owned business. All of the employees, and then with a co-op, all of the customers have a buy-in to the business. There are limited liability corporations that structure themselves as being specifically for the triple bottom line. And so if you want to invest, one of the things that's interesting to me is to go and ask people about investment. I know a couple of the local restaurants that are expanding or differentiating have asked for local investors. They often are talking about two things: people who are going to guarantee loans to the business, which can be either a loan that has some sort of a thing that you can take, you know, if I don't pay you back, you can get my stove. Or they're talking about some sort of LLC partnerships where they're taking in partners, but they're saying that the partners don't actually have to work serving the food. So there is investment partnerships and there's investment loans. And there's actually been a whole lot of, I know that I've done a bunch of small loans to various small businesses in town, which is a peer-to-peer lending network is one of the structures that we had.
And
there
we
are
have
other things too.
Community-supported agriculture,
and
right?
Community-supported art.
Community-supported art.
So community-supported things is a way where you essentially say, give us some money and you will have a share in the thing that we produce. So that idea of which was community-supported agriculture has gone to lots of different ways. And there's also just things where, like, help us get started, just give us money, which are the Kickstarter and various other programs. I know that I gave some money to a local small business who I really like when they had a damaging event in their organization. I didn't loan, I just gave. So there are ways to really already structure. But I think Gordon and I want to talk about other ways of structuring investment.
All right. So what, Gordon, what are some other ways to structure local investing?
Well, first of all, I want to talk a little bit about the small business opportunities that are around. In rural communities, there's a lot of small businesses, one person, two people who start up, and they do it what you call bootstrapping. They basically work and use whatever money they have to try to grow the business. And it's a very slow and difficult way to go, but it's kind of safe, except you may never hit your targets for success or growth. In the economic development world, what's normally suggested for these people is they go get loans. And myself, I've been in business for almost 40 years, and I've never taken out a business loan. I have tried a couple of times, but the conditions were too onerous, and it didn't work. So I've pretty much always been a bootstrapper. But I've always wanted to take on investors but didn't know how. It's another problem with the very small business person is you wear too many hats already, and to think of, say, forming a corporation and managing shareholders and all that stuff, well, that would be even probably more cumbersome than loans. But we have lots of people, we have lots of small businesses that either want to start up or already in process but have been bootstrapping for a long time and can't seem to get over the hump to, say, employ people to wear some of the hats. A short list of what small businesses need are financial capital, so you can buy stuff and fund operations until you're making enough money. You need human capital. One person actually can't wear 10 hats successfully. I mean, if you could do that, I suppose you'd be doing something else. You'd be famous. So other people to handle some of the jobs would be nice. The problem is early on, you can't afford to pay people to do that. Of course, you need equipment, whatever kind of equipment you need for your business. You need probably need a building and maybe need some land, depends on what kind of business it is. So these are the things that small businesses need investment capital for. People do this all the time in Wall Street, in theory, that's what you buy when you buy into a mutual fund or buy stocks is, in theory, you are supporting some business. And the expectation is you will get some return for that. For some reason, we have, I think it's just a cultural training, we don't understand how to do this in terms of our community. Both the small businesses who need money don't know how to do it, and local people who have money to invest don't go there. There are a number of reasons for that I've identified. One is liquidity. People want to be able to sell out immediately, and oftentimes in a local investment, you're more tied into it. But it's kind of like slow food. It's long investing. That's really the basis for sustainable communities. It isn't flipping things for cash. Another reason is perceived risk. I think that didn't mean so much until 2008 that the stock market always goes up. It's just like land always goes up. In 2008, all of a sudden, that wasn't true anymore. And there were people who lost half of what they had invested. So there's real risk in Wall Street and these supposedly safe investments. And then there's also just the sort of smoke and mirrors. Put your money in some kind of an account that pays interest. And what you don't realize is that inflation is growing faster than your interest is. So it's really not much better than putting it in the mattress. So what we've been, Lynn and I and some others have been talking about for the last number of years are what kind of ways can there be to facilitate local investors to invest in local businesses? I'll let you take a shot.
Thanks. Well, we touched on these, you know, really briefly. So Gordon and I started with developing a peer-to-peer lending network. So one of the things I want to say is that there are all kinds of federal regulations that will come down hard, primarily on small people, not on large, you know, larger, wealthier folks. So we cannot and will not do like an investment pool. We're not going to be acting like a bank. We're not going to be acting like any kind of an entity where you go and there's a pool of funds. There's actually been some historical use of pooling funds as a cooperative, and that started back in the 30s, primarily in African-American communities as a way to form community banks and stuff like that. But we're not going to go there. So you can have a peer-to-peer lending network where you can say, I'll loan you $2,000 to help you with this particular product launch, and then you set the terms to be paid back. And the folks who in the peer-to-peer lending network that we started working on tended to have some pretty reasonable terms. Terms like this: no interest for a year if you pay it back in a year. Just, you know, kind of neighborly things. Again, like I said, there's ways to form entities. So if you and some other folks want to form a limited liability corporation to loan money or to invest in something, it's pretty easy to do that. But the thing, and I'm going to ta-da here, that Gordon and I have been working on for the last years, is to do a direct public offering. And so let me tell you what a direct public offering is and is not. When I say to folks, gee, we've been working on a DPO, they say, oh, an IPO. Well, no. DPO is actually a smaller, limited, structured offering where an entity like an LLC or a small corporation or a business partnership or even a nonprofit says, here's what we think the value of our business is, and we will share equity in that by selling equity units in that. So it's a smaller scale than an IPO, and it does not usually involve big banks. So we're not going to have Morgan Stanley coming and handling this. It's usually done by the people who are doing it. And Gordon and I are pretty excited about having worked through the DPO process, because I think now that we can say that there's been only two in the state of New Mexico, and we're involved in one of them. So that's the thing that I want to say about that, is that DPO as a way to raise money for a local entity is one thing, but knowing about how to do a DPO is the thing that I'm really excited about, because we can now share that knowledge.
Wow. It is amazing, just doing a little bit of research on local investment, all the things out there that could be done. I mean, it's a huge list of potential ways in which you can do local investing. Gordon, this has been something that you've been working on for years.
Yeah, I'll just give a few examples, and they're going to be personal examples because that's what I do. And I wanted to say that up front, because there'll be all kinds of other opportunities or situations that fit that I would love for other people to come out with. But one area I've been working on for years is in forest restoration, forest thinning. And myself and some others started Gila WoodNet, which is actually a nonprofit, in 1998, trying to put together a set of linked activities to create an industry around forest restoration and small trees. And we've done reasonably well. There's been quite a bit of grant money available for that. But still, making the transition into being a real business is very difficult, and it's something that will require more investment. We've essentially been bootstrapping the nonprofit. But along with that, you know, we're using small trees that traditionally have no value. In fact, they have less than no value as a danger in the forest. And we've been doing product development. So there's at least three or four businesses that could come out of this. As the R&D guy, it never really was my intention to own and operate any of these businesses. I was just trying to put together the pieces. And they're more or less put together. And yet I'm still in this bootstrapping mode of wearing too many hats, and I'm really hoping to put together community members, perhaps do another DPO, direct public offering, with a clear business plan and financial projections and triple bottom line projections. One of them is a biochar.
So let's hold it right there, Gordon, and we'll come back and talk about biochar. Stay tuned, and we'll be back for the second half of Earth Matters with Linda Amon Smith and Gordon West of the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. Don't go away. Welcome back to Earth Matters. This is Allison Civic, Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. My guests today are Linda Amon Smith and Gordon West of the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, and we've been talking about local investing, and we left off, Gordon was talking about Gila WoodNet and forest restoration and forest products, and Gordon, you were just going to start to tell us about the second component of that business, biochar.
Right, so I wanted to use biochar as an example of a triple bottom line business or business opportunity, in that on the environmental side, its resource is this liability of excess biomass in the forest. So by thinning the forests, reducing fire hazard, we increase forest health and watershed health. If we can get that material out and turn it into higher value products, that will create jobs, which is the social side of the triple bottom line. And if the products are high enough value added, like biochar can be, it will also make money. And then the last link in that chain is that biochar is actually used to mitigate a number of environmental problems, one being soil productivity, and the other being carbon sequestration. It's putting carbon into the soil is actually recognized as the leading strategy for sequestering carbon to reduce atmospheric loading. And this can all be a business, and it can all be a local business. So it's a way to locally invest in the triple bottom line.
So I have a question here in terms of, you said earlier that you are thinking about doing a direct public offering for that business. I think most people are sort of used to the whole idea of a stockbroker, and, you know, you just buy stocks through your stockbroker. How do DPOs actually work? How do you get connected? How does it work?
Let me first dispel a misconception. When you are buying stock from a stockbroker, let's say that you buy a share of Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble gets none of that money. What that really is a secondary market. Procter & Gamble got the capital investment when they did their public offerings. And the initial public offering is the first one that a corporation or an entity does, and then there's a series of offerings after that. But then there's an exchange market, which is something that we lack. You invite me back for a discussion about the history of local investment and how it's all moved to New York City rather than the number of local exchanges that used to exist in the United States. So it's easy to call up a stockbroker or even online buy a share of Procter & Gamble. But if you really want to be a part of local ownership, then a direct public offering is a much more local entity. It is completely legal in New Mexico. What you have to do is write up a variety of documents, look at your financials, identify how much money you think that the investment ought to be overall, determine an increment of that, and then locally, not through brokers. That's one of the things that you don't do, is you don't do brokers. The people who are engaged in the business do the work themselves of selling or inviting, marketing the ownership. You get then an ownership share. You get an equity share of the business. And you have to have a person who's working with an entity to make sure that the accounting is straight. So there's a lot of rigorous demands for doing a DPO, but that ought to be for any kind of a business. If people take your money, or if you give people your money, you ought to then be able to say, where is it and how much work is it doing? The thing that Gordon and I are going to encourage you to not ask first is, what's my biggest return going to be? But rather, what are the spectrum of returns in terms of people, planet, and profit that this money is going to get? So a DPO is much more local, specific to one entity, controlled by that entity, and without a whole lot of inclusion of the stockbrokers and big bankers as compared to any kind of initial public offering or the secondary market. Okay. Is that helpful or not?
Yeah, so really you're saying then, you're buying stock in some company, you're kind of going through a secondary market. You're with the direct public offering, you're cutting out the middleman, it sounds like.
When you buy from a stockbroker a share of Procter & Gamble, that share is bought by another individual or entity. None of it goes to the business. Zero, zero, zero. If you buy an equity share from an entity doing a direct public offering, all of that money goes to the business.
Right.
So there's a real big difference in terms of where does the money go.
So really, it sounds to me like you're harnessing, taking money that could be available here, or taking it away, so to speak, from Wall Street.
Boy, we would like that.
And investing it here similarly, just directly into these local businesses and keeping that money here locally, doing good for our local businesses. One thing I read, and a lot of people have talked about this, we've even heard it in the presidential debates, that small businesses, Main Street, are really what is generating most of the jobs here in America. 99% of the jobs are coming from Main Street as opposed to Wall Street. So it seems like local investing, DPOs, all the great examples that you all have given us today are a way to help create those jobs. Can you talk about the job aspect?
Very well said, Allison.
So the economy, the big E economy, is really mostly about, as Linda mentioned, the trading of shares of something that already exists. And some people have advanced that to a high art where they can do it in nanoseconds. And, you know, all of this trading isn't really trading of things that are valuable to us in our local economy, unless you get a little bit of money off of it. One thing about investing locally is you actually know what your money is doing. And you can choose based upon that. You know, Wall Street doesn't know anything about our economy, and it doesn't care. But if you invest locally, then it's all about caring. You can pick businesses that you want to support, and you will actually be supporting them without any fees or brokerage transactions. It's all direct. And you will actually own a piece of the business, and you'll feel like you own a piece. Whether it's risky or not, my experience is it's probably not. But in any case, you'll feel like you can do something about it. So you won't be just a passive, you know, wait for somebody to send you a report. Now, in terms of jobs, investing locally means investing in local jobs, because the local business, whatever they need the money for, it's going to have local benefits, whereas an investment in Wall Street will have zero local benefits, there's a chance it could be a microscopic percentage, but really no local benefits.
Jobs are created when goods and services are sold. And the ideal situation for an economy like Silver City, ideal, would be to have a big portion of the goods and services being sold by people buying them from outside our area. You know, that's the big pipe in. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't all be buying our grass-fed beef patty at the local co-op, but it does mean that tourism, and especially things like recreational tourism, cultural tourism, historical tourism, is one of the big economic drivers that we should be creating more industry, more local businesses to serve. That's a vastly underserved population, in my view.
So the energy upgrades or energy efficiency market, to finish that example, first of all, there's that maybe 50% return on investment. But there's also, for the rest of the triple bottom line, someone has to do that work. And it's a local business opportunity. And on the environmental side, all of that fossil fuel not burned in terms of natural gas or coal and power plants or even firewood in the fireplace, by saving energy, you are reducing the CO2 contributions to the atmosphere. So it's a global warming effect. That just makes my head spin to think that you could have a 50% return on investment, slow down global warming, and create local jobs. I mean, why are we doing that?
That's right. Well, and we are doing that, right?
We're working on it.
Right,
yes.
right. So let's talk more about the jobs situation. Let's talk about more examples for creating local jobs. Back to Gila WoodNet and other potential examples of creating jobs here locally from local investment. What else can you tell us about job creation? I mean, we are trying to diversify our economy. We know the mines are playing out and, you know, they're not going to be here forever. What are some other things that we can be doing to create local jobs? Linda, you've talked about tourism and
ecotourism, cultural tourism, what the Green Chamber sponsored a guy a few years back to talk about civic tourism, about all of the usually small businesses that could really, and I'm by small, I mean perhaps with 3 to 12 employees, that could be created to service that as we expand. The things like the Continental Divide Trail, let's get people off the trail and here. So they come into resource. Perhaps then we could get folks back into the wilderness with other kinds of day packages to take them out and back. Let me just talk about jobs, though, with a specific example, and that is that with the DPO that Gordon and I have been engaged in, with a local hotel, that's a historical hotel, the DPO would complete a variety of specific projects. People could invest in the hotel and then go in and see the work being done.
And the work's being done by local people.
So that's one of the commitments. And the work is being done in an energy-efficient manner. That's one of the commitments. And then the projections are that to grow a local kind of business, or actually, I'm going to go back to bringing the money from outside. So currently, at that hotel, 60% of the guests come from Arizona and Texas and California. They already come from outside. One of the business models to improve would be to have a conferencing center, a full-service conferencing capability for small meetings and conferences. So I remember we talked once about having some of the Gila Festival there. There are some upgrades that need to be done. There's literally thousands of small associations, the Southwest Archaeological Society, the overall Chamber of Commerce in Texas, that would be, I am sure, happy to come to a beautiful retreat area like Silver City for a small conference of, let's say, 80 to 100 people. So if we could develop the conference capability downtown, that would result in a net at least 6 to 8 full-time jobs at that one hotel. And then think about the other jobs that would be created by having conferences regularly coming into our downtown. That's an example.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and talk more to the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, Gordon West and Linda Amon-Smith here on Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. All right, let's continue our discussion about local investing with Linda Amon-Smith and Gordon West of the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce. So let's talk about what the Green Chamber of Commerce does in the area of local investing. What's the role of the Green Chamber? And I know local investing has been a big priority of the Green Chamber. And Gordon, you are currently the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce president. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. So you get to kick off the last segment here on local investing.
Yeah. So one of my primary interests in being on the Green Chamber was this local investment idea. And when I met Linda, we started talking about it and discussed it some at Green Chamber board meetings. We started looking into the BALLE, the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies work, and discovered this thing called a Local Investment Opportunity Network. So we started one of those. It's just an informal way to network. It's not an actual official group. There's no board. There's nobody running it. There's no budget. But whenever somebody has an idea, either as an investor or a business that wants to be invested in, if they let us know, we'll do our best to call out to the community and see who might be interested in having a discussion about it. And those discussions can end up with maybe just a deal being made between an investor, one investor and one business. Or more often, there's a lot of discussion, which is kind of vetting the idea or trying to figure out ways to solve problems. The Green Chamber is also affiliated with the Partnership for Responsible Business, which is a statewide organization. And I'm currently on the board of that. There will always be someone from the Green Chamber on the board. And that's an interesting relationship in that we can both bring ideas down from the PRB, the Partnership for Responsible Business. But actually, the way it's been working more is we've been taking ideas up to them to try to implement and distribute across the state. So we're kind of see ourselves as model making for solutions that can be adopted by lots of other small communities across the state.
And how do you help local businesses here in Southwest New Mexico through the Green Chamber of Commerce?
Well, there's a whole lot of just informal relationships that get developed. I mean, business really runs on relationship. And a good example, I think, is to develop the capability to network. And now we have a regular Green Drinks, which I'm going to plug right now, on the second Thursday of this month. So on the 10th, we're going to be having green drinks, and we're going to feature as our guest speaker, Teresa Dalberdine. Now, Teresa is a real entrepreneur here in town, and they have been members of the Green Chamber since they started their businesses here in town. So she's going to be talking about her newest projects, and I'm especially going to want to have her talking about how she was able to work together to get the Local Economic Development Act funding from the state. Now, here's another way where the Green Chamber is helpful, which is there will be a workshop on Tuesday, March 15th, open to local entrepreneurs about, could your business qualify for LEADA funding? Well, I helped put that together as a member of the Green Chamber. Green Chamber is kind of a co-sponsor of that with the Economic Development Department and the Small Business Development Center. So there's a lot of collaborative moving, getting things going in a sometimes an inch at a time that the Green Chamber is involved in. And so members of the Green Chamber are active in the triple line of their business and active networking across businesses and across interstate entities. I guess I'll just do a really quick thing here too, which is the third component of, you know, that you have local, buy local, and you have invest local, and there's local finance. And one of the things that is often lacking is an understanding by our banking institutions about really the importance of small business. And I've got appointments regularly to go talk with them. If their officers would just stop changing, I would probably have more success in getting them to really understand how important it is to have small commercial loans and how that might be structured better for things like energy efficiency loans. Because right now, it's pretty hard to go get a loan, even though you're going to get a big payback on that, because of the way that finance and banking is structured.
So things really haven't changed after we heard through the economic crisis, oh, we got to push down more of this money to Main Street.
Oh, no, that
as
didn't
opposed
change
to
at all.
Wall Street. So that didn't really change. We don't even really see any improvement here locally.
Nope.
Okay. Wow. So where can people go to get more information on the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce?
Well, gee, I can't remember the email. Oops, I didn't bring
or
it.
Or the website.
I didn't bring
okay. There's you all have a website, so people can go to the website partnership and find out more about Partnership for Responsible Business as well. And how many members here?
We're pretty lacking on materials, right, with our hand. I just did a count. We have about 150 paid-up members on the Green Chamber membership. And interestingly enough, I'm going to put this out here, about 30% of those are what we call solopreneurs. Those are people who are actually working, providing services via internet, the internet. They're working from their own office or own home. So we have paralegals, and we have translators, and we have technical writers, and we have data managers. That's a whole other economic aspect that really needs to be worked on.
And nonprofits, too.
A lot of nonprofits,
right.
Yeah.
And nonprofits, I know that sometimes we hear locally that nonprofits do not contribute to the local economy.
They contribute tens of millions of dollars a year to the local economy.
Okay. So, and through providing social services.
They bring in grants. They bring in services. They help people get back to work.
And people have jobs working for, and
yeah.
So they're, and that money is staying here local, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a big economic driver.
Big economic driver. And I'm a big nonprofit fan as a organizational form.
Okay. And you mentioned just in our few remaining minutes here, the solopreneurs, the internet. Broadband is a critical component
yes.
of that. And I know, Linda, you've worked a lot on that issue and getting better broadband here.
I just represented the Green Chamber, the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber, at a cyber infrastructure conference that was held last Thursday and Friday. That was a joint conference with the University of New Mexico, New Mexico State University, and WNMU, and included some really cool people to talk about the needs for cyber infrastructure. And so, yeah, that's something. We're getting bigger pipe. So one of the things that was so cool was the first time that I saw the most recently completed fiber map of the state of New Mexico. We still need more over here. But I really feel like that was a cool group of people to connect with and to be able to continue collaborating with to get more here.
Yes, because yes. So many people who all they need is a laptop and an internet connection, they can do their work anywhere. So why not attract them to Silver City?
Yeah,
and
we
the
know
Gila
where a bunch
region.
Of them are. There's a bunch in Houston. Don't you think that some of those folks from Houston might like to move here where it's cooler and nicer?
Right.
So, I mean, you know, there's some good data out there.
So it sounds like things are hopeful. So
things are hopeful, Allison. You know,
for
even though
bigger
even
pipe.
Even though you know the money that was supposed to be pushed down got sucked off and taken over to other areas. And by the way, I just want to say that in some definitions, and even federal definitions, when they say, "Well, we need to push money out to the rural," they consider a population a city with a population of 250,000 is rural. So we kind of get completely looked over.
Right.
But things are always hopeful.
Okay. So I want to thank both of you. Thanks so much to Linda Amon-Smith and Gordon West of the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce for speaking with us today on Earth Matters. And for more information on local investing or for a podcast of today's program, visit Earth Matters online at gmcr.org. So we'll have lots of web links for people to follow up with the Southwest New Mexico Green Chamber of Commerce, as well as local investing. So that's all the time we have today. And I thank you to our audio engineer and film noir character impersonator, Kyle Johnson. We hope you'll join us again for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio 89.1 FM.